بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. لا يتخذ المؤمنون الكافرين أولياء. Allah Ta'ala knows us more than we know ourselves, and He also knows that we appreciate friendship, companionship. We don't live individual lives and of our own, in our individual selves, we can't get everything worked out. A wealthy man gets up in the morning, he cannot get his works worked out and accomplished without the aid of the poor. Got a business, got a building coming up, then you need the poor to do all the groundwork. You can't do it. With all the wealth, you need him. And the poor can't do without the wealthy. The poor with his strength, with his might, with his ability of doing things, he requires the help of the wealthy. So the wealthy needs the poor needs the wealthy. Hence Allah Ta'ala knows that we cannot live our lives individually, independently. In our infancy, we need the assistance of our mothers. Right? Then our siblings. Can that man live of his own? Can't. I think from all creation, maybe just one, two, from birth they can manage themselves. Maybe some of this fish, they're born somewhere, they're finding their ways. So from birth they can manage their ways, that perhaps just one or two creation, but nearly the rest of all the creation, they require some supervision, some assistance, some cooperation, some help they require. Then as we grow up in our age, we need teachers, ustads, right, instructors to come and instruct us and guide us. And then as we grow up, then we need a wife, can't still live our own. You find a person living now without the company of a wife, young man, unless he's mad or mentally deficient or something else, otherwise he'll need a partner. An exception to rule, some great person he could manage without a wife. But that's an exception to the rule. So, no matter which level of life you're looking at, you need some company, you need some companionship. But in the companionship, what is needed to be seen is how do you relate to your companions, number one, and how do you choose your company? You can't just relate to your companions anyhow you wish, you can't. So in the companionship, one very important note is, whether it's a wife, whether it's a friend, whether it's a child, then you need to be moderate in your relationship. You can't allow your relationship to be without any moderation. If you allow it to go without moderation, then you'll have to make some compromises. You like the person too much, right? And because of your attachment, now you allow him to cross the boundaries of the Sharia, parameters of the Sharia. And you have to respect the relationship. He's got a wedding, for example, and in the wedding he's got mixing up. Men and women are mixing up, integrating, right? Or he's got some music playing on one side, or something is carrying on. But now, for the sake of relationship, you don't want to break relationship, you make these compromises. You don't want to talk to him about the music that he's got. You don't want to talk to him about the intermingling, right? You don't want to talk to him about any wrong that is happening. Now, that's your relationship. Your relationship has become so thick that you can't say anything. So, one is that you need to know the level of relationship, and number two is how do you maintain the relationship? Both are important. If one of these two things are not known or not practiced upon, then this relationship is a disaster. يوم يعد الظالم على يدي يقول يا ليتني اتخذت مع الرسول سبيلا يا ويلتا ليتني لم اتخذ فلانا خليلا. On the day of Qiyamah, the sinner, يعد الظالم, the sinner, one that was wrong, he was in sin and he was in wrong, so in that frustration, in that fury, that frustration, that desperation that he is on the day of Qiyamah. You know, when you're in desperation and you're furious and you can't express your fury, and you begin to bite yourself. If I get this person, what I'll do? Then you want to bite your finger. In fury now, you don't know what to do. You've got no way to express your vengeance and the anger, there's no way to go and express it. So you want to bite yourself, you want to bite your fingers. So the Quran Sharif speaks about this person, that in his fury, in his frustration and desperation, if he begins to bite at his finger, he'll bite his whole hand out. Can you imagine now the desperation, the despondency? He's got nowhere. On the day of Qiyamah, there's no help, there's no assistance. In this world, if there's a problem, then there's a help. You can always seek for help. Right? There's influence that you can get. You can get assistance. You can use your wealth. So there's no wealth, there's no influence, there's no assistance, nowhere, nothing, no support, no support base. When there's no support base, and you're seeing now you're doomed for destruction. And you also realize that it was because of this friendship that you came to this end. You're associated with this person here, and your friendship was too thick. When your friendship was too thick, you didn't know where to draw the line. You couldn't draw the line because of your extreme friendship. Right? But then you see the end result of this relationship and this friendship, and then you say, Ya waylata laytani lam attakhid, I should have not taken such a person as a friend. But death is such a thing that after that it's just rewards. Rewards of punishment. You can't reverse it. In life, I think for nearly everything you get a second chance. Perhaps for age you don't get a second chance. But for every other thing you get a second chance. You lost wealth, you can regain. You failed an examination, you can write a supplementary examination. Or the worst, you can repeat the examination. You lost your name, you can gain your name again, right? So, in this world, there is a way to rectify, to reverse things, to get back on course. There is a way to do it. You can somehow get a second chance. You can reverse things. But the moment you hit the grave, there's no second chance. It locks up, it closes up, and you no second chance. No matter who you are, no matter how much your mother may cry for you, but there's no second chance. You hit the grave, and then it's just an onward journey. You can't reverse the thing. Right? The right thing would have been that we understood things in perspective, when we seen that there is no second chance, it's just one chance, right? And that life is a permanent, it's an eternal life. In this life, we try to look for pleasure and comfort, but the ultimate. Aircon, the ultimate, right? Heat is the ultimate. Carpet, the best. The interior decorating, the best, right? Motor car, the best. What we can think of, ultimate. According to our budget, the best what we can do, we must get it. The house, the finishing must be the best. And the business, better than best. We just roll on. So we look for the ultimate. That's our nature. We look for brighter and higher horizons all the time. So we're born like that. We're born looking for better horizons. Better turnovers all the time. But we need to keep in mind two things. One is this, that it's just a temporary probatory life. Transitory, fleeting, probation. And at one point we'll have to cut off. Whether we like it, we don't like it. But we'll have to break away. Either we break away or that thing breaks away from us. man could eat so much of chocolates and sweets and confectionery, pastries. Now the doctor says, it's either this or dialysis. Either dialysis or amputation. I mean, come to that point, doctor, whatever you say, I'll do it. There's one in 100 possibility we can reverse this thing. Doctor, whatever you say, I will do it. Right. So you can't have anything to the ultimate here. You may say that ultimate, but you can't have it. You go for the ultimate, you destroy yourself. See that food now, even for the ultimate, you destroyed yourself. So it is showing you that there's a cut-off point. So you can't have the ultimate here. Yes, the ultimate you can have in the hereafter. Because there is no point of termination. Eat and eat and eat. Drink and drink and drink. Man drinks, if he drinks wine, that's one of the most enjoyable drinks for the kuffar, right? He drinks to a point after that, then he becomes a toy for children, right? They laugh at him, they'll abuse him, they'll insult him. He becomes a plaything for children. So he brings embarrassment for himself. Most intelligent person, but he takes a second shot or the third shot, then he's shot down. Then everybody shoots him down. He's a plaything after the first thing. For everybody. Food also, a certain point you have to cut off. Right? So this world is showing you we got pleasures, but the pleasure has to cut off at a certain point. And you compare this against the hereafter, you're drinking, there's wine also. Khamrul ladhatul lisharibin, enjoyment. But it doesn't embarrass you. Getting the excitement, the enjoyment that the liquor will normally give you, all the excitement, but it doesn't bring you any embarrassment. You don't lose your senses. Imagine you're getting the enjoyment without you losing your senses, without any headaches. La ghawl fiha wa la yunzafun. No headaches, and you don't get any type of embarrassment. Nobody's running you down. So it's drink and drink and drink, eat and eat and eat. And it's just digesting. You don't feel bloated and you don't feel loaded. No bloating, no loading. You eat and you digest. It's just eating and just digesting. So it's a continuous procedure. Just carries on and on and on. No ending. So this can never happen in this world. And time also, unlimited time. Yeah, even air time, you say, well, end time is finished, I can't talk to you. Limited air time, can't do beyond that. So everything here is got a limitation. But everything there is unlimited. وَمَا هُمْ مِنْهَا بِمُخْرَجِينَ No tiredness, nasab. وَمَا هُمْ مِنْهَا بِمُخْرَجِينَ No nasab and tiredness. And you're not expert of Jannat. Jannat, you're there for keeps. You're there forever. And لَا يَبْغُونَ عَنْهَا حِوَلَى When they say everything in Jannat is for continue, for forever, for it's lasting, the enjoyment and excitement is also lasting. وَمَا هُمْ مِنْهَا لَا يَبْغُونَ عَنْهَا حِوَلَى You don't want to move. You don't want to move away from Jannat. You don't want any change. Like here now, you had enough now, you want to change. Also, an old Chachana, he passed away. So normally, they take that first row on the side, because it's easy for them to come in, and the chair is there, so they come and sit on the chair. So our teaching is we pick up the person's morale, Chacha, you'll get up nice now, inshallah, you'll come right. And it seems already he could battle himself, but he could come, he was quite alright, wealthy. Children were taking care of him, all that happened. But when I gave him that compliment, Chacha, inshallah, you live, don't worry. Well, don't make that dua now. Make the dua that I go nicely now. I had enough. And he only saw about 84, 83, 84. So now I had enough now. I make dua that I go nicely with Iman. So life also, this life, this earthly life, reach a certain point. So now I had enough now. Allah Pak, now take me, keep me with respect, take me with ease and respect as well. But there, la yabghuna anha hiwala. You don't want to change. You want to move on and on and on. Can you imagine the pleasure, the excitement, the thrill Allah Pak has got, that you don't want to change from that? It's a continuous procedure. So like in this world, when we're looking for some comfort, we're looking for the ultimate. So the sensible thing is, the life beyond, then we look for the ultimate. We don't look for a small pleasure of Jannah, no, the ultimate pleasure. What is the best? for the best, you have to give the best price, obviously. You want it, take it, we got it. But you pay the price and you get it. Don't you see that same qaida, that same law prevails here? You want the best, pay the price, you will get it. For the best pool, for the heating system and all that, you will get it. But just pay the price and you will get it. You want the best home with the best finishes, pay the price, you will get it. In the best area, but pay the price and you will get the thing. So whatever you want in this world, you will get, but you pay the price, you get it, right? Don't you get it? So this is teaching us that Allah Pak has got all the comforts, right? And the comforts are far beyond our imagination, but you pay the price and you will get that. إِمْ مِنْ شَيْءٍ إِلَّا عِنْدَنَا خَزَائِنَ. We got loads. In today's slang language, we've got stacks. Stacks. So he's got treasures of it. Whatever you talk of, he's got treasures of it. Pay the price and take it. Now, look at the whole equation now. Again, just look, revisit the whole thing. You want the ultimate, you want the best. Right? Your life has got a limitation. Right? And that life is eternal. Right? So what is a sensible thing to do? To buy that which is eternal, to buy into that which is the ultimate, and to buy into that which is everlasting, not ending. To buy into that. If you want to really buy, then pay the ultimate price. You pay it, Allah says it's yours. And you say, no, no. Ultimate price, I don't want to give Allah. I don't want to give you the ultimate price. That I leave for my friends, for my comfort, for my children. I don't want to give you that ultimate price. But I want the ultimate. But I don't want to give you that ultimate price. Abdullah ibn Jafar radiallahu anhu, he came across an orchard. So that orchard seemed to be very, very attractive. The orchard, the plants, the produce also seemed to be very attractive. He was just admiring that thing, and he saw one slave that is in charge of that whole orchard. So when I spoke to him, who are you, the owner? He said, no, I'm a slave. I attend to this whole orchard. Massive orchard, and I attend to it, take care of it. Just then he saw one dog pulling in, and his meals also were coming through same time. About the same time, the dog was there, and the slave's meals also came in at the same time. As the meals came in, so he's taking one morsel, and equal to what he's taking, he's passing on to the dog. If it's one roti, then one roti is passing to the dog. If it's one boti, then one boti is passing on to the dog, right? So whatever he's eating, he's passing on to the dog. Whether it's a meat, whether it's whatever, he's passing it on. Equal. Now this was quite strange, surprising. Okay, what you're eating, you're passing on to the dog. So he says to the slave, you know, this dog could have been satisfied with something much more inferior. Bones, all that, you could have, the scraps you could have given it to the dog. You could have been content. But what you're eating of, you're passing on to the dog. Are you feeling right? So he says, no, I feel ashamed of Allah Ta'ala. Because myself and this dog, we are sharing the protection and the security of this entire orchard. See, my job is to secure, to take care. But I take care and this dog takes care. So both are sharing the job. We are sharing responsibilities. When we're sharing responsibilities, then we need to share the comforts as well. Now I feel ashamed that we're sharing responsibilities. I'm taking more comforts than this dog. Imagine the consciousness of a Muslim in that era. Now, if you are in partnership with me, I want to see how I eat of you. What is mine is mine. What is yours also is mine. I just want to see how I can just spill it over on my side. Spill it a little bit more over on my side. Give you something just to keep you happy. But more and more it must just come on my side. However it comes, it must come. But in a dignified manner. Even if it's haram, halal, it's alright. But with respect, it may just come on to my side. Now, this is a man, and this is a dog. But he's so particular about this that we are sharing responsibilities. When we're sharing responsibilities, then I need to see this dog like I'm seeing to myself. I need to make it comfortable like I'm worried about my comfort. So what I eat, let me pass it on to the dog. So this Abdullah bin Jafar radiallahu anhu got very excited, took the particulars and went to the boss now, owner of the slave. So he says to the owner, you know, I want to purchase the slave of yours. I came across this orchard and I want to buy the slave. So he says, you know, it's very difficult to part away with the slave because the slave was with us from birth. We attached with this child. Brought him up, gave him all the comforts. And he was like our own child. You know, we bonded so well. Today we have to send, we ask ourselves to be excused. So he said, no, please, you know, I just had a liking for the slave. Please sell him to me. He begged and he begged and he begged. And he kept on insisting. Then a Muslim's heart is a heart that is overflowing with generosity. Tell him twice, thrice, he wants to give. His heart is so soft. So alright, with a very, very heavy heart, we sell him to you. Alright. The orchard that he was managing, we want to buy the orchard as well. So alright, the orchard, to sell the orchard is alright. But that slave one is a difficult one. Although you insisted and I sold it, but it's a very difficult one. So he sold the slave, he sold the orchard, he bought the boat, and then he says, but you have a slave girl. I said, no, I got one slave girl, right? Get me one slave girl. He chose the beautiful one, and he goes to the slave and he says, you see, I have bought this orchard that you are managing. So immediately the slave is so conscious of Allah Ta'ala, look at the consciousness of the slave. He moves out of the orchard. He said, why did you move out like this? He said, this doesn't belong to me now any longer. It doesn't belong to my master. Now, it's me trespassing someone else's property. I don't want to be guilty of that. See, a slave, but the consciousness of Allah Ta'ala. Isn't it a lesson for us? Free men, people with respect and dignity. Do we have that consciousness, that awareness of Allah Ta'ala, that this little slave who's got no social standing, he has that consciousness, that awareness, it doesn't belong to my master any longer, and I need to pull out of this straight away. And straight away gets out. That it doesn't belong to me any longer, then how can I be here? How can I manage this when it doesn't belong to me, or belong to my master? So, alright, you know, we have bought orchard, but we have bought you also. Now he says, I feel very miserable about this, because these were people that I grew up with from my infancy, from my childhood I was with them. And I enjoyed the love, I enjoyed the friendship, the bonding, the muhabbat. Together, would celebrate, enjoy everything together. Now if I separate this person, I find it very difficult, extremely difficult. But anyway, now that you have bought me, may Allah Ta'ala give barakat in that. In the sale of the orchard, in you buying me off, may Allah Ta'ala give barakat in all that. So I bought you off, and I bought the slave girl here, I want to marry you. So may Allah Ta'ala give barakat for that as well. And then he says, you know what, this orchard here, I bought it off, I am writing it off in your name as a gift. Abdullah bin Jafar. And he thought, you know, this is now the height of generosity. That I bought the slave, I bought a girl for him, I bought the orchard, and I gave it to him entirely. Now the slave turns around, says, well, you gave it to me now, it's mine, right? So he writes out a will, that this now, from now, it belongs to my bosses. The family of Usman, Ghani, Radiyallahu, these are my bosses. I have given it to them now. It's work for them. So the slave, he overtook them as well. Imagine he's got out of his slavery. He's had a freehold property, got everything. But the bonding that he had, the love, the respect, the appreciation, you know, this whole property, I'm giving it away. So this is that person who is buying into the ultimate. He knows what he's buying. There's no loss for that. Here, you may incur a loss. You bought in something. So there's a possibility that thing will turn around as a gold mine. And it's a possibility that thing may turn out not even as a coal mine. As a dump yard it may turn out. Both are possibilities. But the akhirat, whatever you invest there, it's sure, it's yaqeenan. It's guaranteed. For the hadith says, اللَّهُمَّ لَا عَيْشَ إِلَّا عَيْشُ الْآخِرَةِ. Life begins with death. Allah Pak must give us that understanding, that real life starts off with death. وَمَا هَذِي الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا لَهُ وَلَعِبُ وَإِنَّ الدَّارَ الْآخِرَةَ لَهِيَ الْحَيَوَانِ. Real life is the life beyond this life here. That's real life. Yeah, they say real life estate, real life insurance. But it's not real life. Real life is beyond. But I don't blame the kafir for saying real life, because the dunya is his jannat. This world is his jannat. When this world is his jannat, he will say it's real life. Until death strikes, he thinks this is real life. That's how the kafir will think. Because he doesn't have the belief of continuity. He doesn't have a belief of akhirat. So this is life for him. Therefore he does the best for this life. And for us, the life starts with death. So what we're supposed to be doing is, we take a lesson from this kafir. How do we take a lesson? That he did so much for his dunya, because he felt that this was real life. He felt that this was the only life. And we think that the only life is akhirat. So if he's done so much for this world, thinking it to be the only life, we think that the only life is akhirat, then how much must I do for that? For that section now, for that sector of life, what must I do? Isn't it a lesson that we learn from that kafir? Instead of us learning the right lesson from the kafir, then we want to imitate that kafir. Kafir got this house, I must get it. Got this car, I must get it. Got this investment, I must get it. You know, this type of business, I must get it. So we are competing with the kafir, but is it in the right thing or is it in the wrong things? We're talking of friendship, right? So this friendship, see what it has done. What it's resulted in. When we became the Muslim minority, we took on this friendship. And this friendship, their culture penetrated into us, their ways, their papers, their magazines, their culture, everything of theirs penetrated into us. To a point that we began to think like them. That no, my child must become a professional person. He must have this type of business. But when did we think that my child must have the consciousness of Allah Ta'ala? He must have the consciousness of Akhirat. That's the primary thing. That's the primary concern. If he's lost that, he lost everything. When did we think? And if someone thought about it, then he thinks about it until the child is 16, 17, until he's in your control. A little bit of madrasa education I gave him a fair amount of education. Now he must continue. I ask you, do you apply the same standard in your business? Do you apply the same standard? And until he's 15, 16, I must take care of him, madrasa and all that. After that, he must do business. Yeah, for that business and for that financial security, we will be there right till we die. Is my child secure? Does he have a good furniture? Is his stove working? Is the fridge working? Is the freezer working? Does he have enough in his grocery cupboards? So for his physical financial security, we are worried right till the end. He can be a druggie, he can be womanizing, everything. But his physical security, financial security, we are absolutely concerned. See, imbalance, inconsistent plan. On the one end we say that, no, akhirat is a must. The life of akhirat is very important, we say that. But then, how much do we believe in that? When I say believe, how much do we identify? How much do we consider that to be a real thing? Or is it just a concept? It's just an imagination. One is an imagination, one is a reality. Imagination is a different thing, and a reality is a different thing. You see a dream that you became a king, right? That's what dream is, an imagination. Hey, I'm a king, right? But then imagination is an imagination. You are thinking about it, so you saw yourself as a king. And one is a real kingdom. Even if you just call Zulu Natal and you're the total king, you're the full king with all the rights, not with the ANC jumping over you, you have full rights in ANC. The whole KwaZulu, you got the full rights, including all the ship and the oil that's coming through. What will happen to you? You get mad with happiness, isn't it? So it's a different thing altogether. So Allah Pak is saying, لا يتخذ المؤمنون الكافرين. that don't you ever take these people as your friends. Because what will happen is, you will buy into the culture, into their ways, into their thinking, into their education, and before you know it, you are like them, you are behaving like them, in the weddings you are behaving like them. If they got singing, you got singing. If they are doing hall marriages, you are doing hall marriages. If they are doing dancing, you are doing dancing. If they are doing intermingling, you are doing intermingling. If they are videoing, you are videoing. If they are walking up the bride onto the aisle, you are doing it. So if they are doing a bridal shower, you are doing a bridal shower. So there won't be a thing in their culture that you won't be doing. Why this has become? Because you have associated with them. You have befriended them. You have not befriended them directly through their books, through their magazines, through their education. You have now bridged it with them. And you're trying to show them, see, I'm a better kafir than you. If you can do a bridal shower, I can do it better. You can do a wedding reception, I can do it better than you, kafir. So you're showing that kafir that I'm a better kafir than you. What else? Are you showing, impressing to him that I'm a better Muslim than you or a better kafir than yourself? You can be extravagant and wasting, and I can waste even more. I can go right up to Dubai and waste so much of millions on that one wedding. And I can leave everybody starving, so I can be a better kafir than you. I'll still call myself a Muslim. But what are you impressing upon the kafir? You're impressing upon him that you are a better kafir than him. Because that is not a Muslim life. If it is not a Muslim life, then what life are you impressing upon? What are you showing over? What are you boasting over? What are you gloating over? So Allah Pak says, don't take them as friends. لَا تَتَّخِذُوا بِطَانَةً مِّن دُونِكُمْ. That don't take for intimacy, don't take anybody outside your ranks. See the verse, لَا يَتَّخِذِ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ, and the second verse, لَا تَتَّخِذُوا بِطَانَةً مِّن دُونِكُمْ. Intimate. For intimacy, don't take anybody out of your ranks. لَا يَأْلُونَكُمْ خَبَالًا. If you don't take anybody out of your ranks into your intimacy, what's going to happen? They're not going to fail. They're not going to hesitate in corrupting you. They will not fail. They will not pull any punctures. They will try to corrupt you. See the friendship now. Where do you need to draw the friendship? Where do you need to draw the line? There must be a point where you're going to draw the line. And if you're not going to do that, then لَا يَأْلُونَكُمْ خَبَالًا. They are not going to hesitate. They're not going to fail. They're not going to mince the words in corrupting you. In your thinking, in your ways, in your understanding, in everything, they'll corrupt you. لَا يَأْلُونَكُمْ خَبَالًا. What we need to understand is this, that as far as generosity, kindness, fair play is concerned, then there's nobody second to a Muslim. Muslim is far, far ahead. Abu Ubadah radiallahu, Abu Ubaidah radiallahu, right? He is now the head of the entire Syria. He's the head. With all powers, all might, he's the head of the whole Syria. So in the Islamic lifestyle, what they used to do in the old ancient days, we saw some part of it in India, you know, and still it exists in India, that the Muslims will live in their own localities. They'll have a couple of streets, and there'll be only Muslims living there. And some streets, there'll be only non-Muslims living. So there'll be several streets, only Muslims are buying into that, and it's like a pure Muslim area. If you go there, you'll only find a Muslim child, men, women, adults, youngsters, you'll find only Muslims. Another area, you'll find only non-Muslims. Some places in India, you'll still find this, right? And it makes better living as well. But with all that, the generosity, the kindness, the fair play, you won't find anybody close to a Muslim. And in fact, Nabi Sallam, this is a barakat of the teaching of Nabi Sallam, that kafir also, you will treat him fairly, generously, you will show kindness. But then you talk of friendship, intimate friendship, close friendship, then that is only supposed to be a Muslim. But kindness, generosity, fair play, you will show it to a kafir as well. You're not going to hesitate. Abdullah ibn Umar would see that if there's something new that's coming to the house, for example, a good meat parcel has come, right, or he slaughtered an animal, and they see we got some kuffar in our neighborhood, not maybe not immediately, but we got kuffar in our neighborhood, give them a parcel before we eat. A new fruit has come in. Who doesn't enjoy a new fruit coming in? We all enjoy that, but pass on something to them, and then we will enjoy. So if you talk of fair play, you talk of kindness, then Muslim is second to none. We're talking about Abu Ubaidah radiallahu anhu, and they have demarcated one section for kuffar, one section for Muslims. So now they are practicing archery. Muslim, what he must do? He must prepare. So he's practicing archery. As he's practicing archery, so that one spear or one arrow strays, and that thing gets the eye of their god. It's a statue now, it's a god, and it gets the eye. So it defaces the whole statue. Now they came complaining, you know, our god, and this is what happened. Your man was practicing archery, and he defaced the eye of our god. He bust our eye, the eye of our god. Now see, when I say fair play and justice, and see what level Muslims have taken it to. Abu Ubaidah says, see, I understand your sentiments. This was the head, this was the greatest in your understanding, your culture, this was the greatest. In our culture, I'm the greatest, right? I'm the head. So I stand here, take this arrow and bust my eye. You see the fair play. Now this is the thing that attracted people to Islam. It's not our wealth that will attract. It's not our expertise in worldly things that will attract people to Islam. Our big shops, our money, no, it won't attract. It is something else that will attract. They began to cry. Those kuffar began to cry. You all are the leaders here. You all are the rulers here. And this is our god, we so-called call our god, right? But it can always be repaired. We are repairing our god, imagine. We are adjusting our, we're fixing our god. The right thing to say is, our god will fix us up, he'll repair us, right? But then, when accidentally one of your people has got the eye of our stone god that can be repaired, you know, fixed up to original beauty, you want to give away your eyes. They went out of control. They couldn't hold the tears. See the level of justice, fair play, muhabbat, understanding. Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu, I'm showing you, see, we don't know parameters really. When we say no fair play, must be loving and understanding, but it's all mincing words and ambiguous terms that we are using. So we don't know what is fair play, we don't know what is justice, we don't know what is generosity and kindness. As Umar radiallahu anhu, he sends his one jamaat, go and live in this settlement here, this whole country here, you go and live there. So they go, lands upon lands, Muslims are just conquering, so you need people to go and protect. So the whole jamaat, a couple of hundreds or thousands of people went and settled in that area. After some years, Umar radiallahu anhu asked them to come back, because we need you to be in another place. So there's two directives that reach these people here. See, we're here with you, and we took the jizya, the nominal taxes that are taken. We took the jizya, so we're returning all the taxes to you, because we can't offer you the security that we promised. When we can't offer you the security, whatever we've taken for all the past years, that we're returning everything to you. Right? That was the one announcement that they made. And all what we have taken from you, we are returning everything. And number two, we are leaving this place. This is the second commandment, second instruction that they had announced. Those Jews, they cried and they said, you know, you want, see what offers they made. The kitabs they got up till now, they got in record. You see, those Jews cried out, came out of their homes and said, you want land property, take it from us. You want wealth, gold and silver, take it from us. You want woman to marry, take a woman. We offer you land, we offer you wealth, we offer you woman, but please, for God's sake, don't leave this country. Because when you came in, then all the fighting stopped. All the robbing and cheating went. All the hijacking, everything ended up. Everything. There was security, there was peace, there was understanding, There was fair play right throughout. Now we are afraid that when you leave, you will take away all that security, all that fair play, the generosity, everything will go with you. We'll go back to what we were. We were robbing, murdering, cheating, all the type of wrong that you can think of, will be reverting back to that. So please, for God's sake, don't you go away from here. But they had the command of the Amir, meaning they had to leave, and they had to leave at once. But you see the fair play, the justice, that Kafir also wanted that Muslim to be living around there. Now I ask you, that we tell the Kuffar here, that you want to leave here. Say, you're leaving today, you can leave tomorrow, yesterday you can leave here. And you want an assistance to go, we'll take you, give you a free flight also to leave. So they want you to leave. And then they were forcing them to remain in the lands. So what was it? It was pure Islam that they showed. They will love you because of Islam. And they will hate you because of you parting away from Islam. If you analyze the whole story, they love you, why? Because of you joining up with Islam. And they will hate you because you have parted away from Islam. See one hadith, time is a little this. This hadith, this a thing that is called bir, right? Bir refers to the perfection in piety. Then we talk of ultimate. So for the ultimate, you pay the ultimate price. This friendship story I'll continue some other time, but let me talk something about bir, right? So at least there is some business now. Our business is sawab, you're going to do it, and all of us will benefit, inshallah. Right? So we're talking of the ultimate bir, right? And bir means perfection. Perfection in what? Perfection in piety. So how are you going to get that perfection in piety? You want that perfection in piety, so that what you earn also will be the ultimate. The perfect price for the ultimate reward. Perfect price for the ultimate reward. You bring the price, Allah Pak is saying, I'll give it to you. But you say, no, Allah Pak, you Ghafoor Rahim, will give out the ultimate. Allah Pak is not only Ghafoor Rahim for the Akhirat, for here also, He is Ghafoor Rahim. But here you know the system, you pay the ultimate price, and you get the best price you get. You get the best reward. So the same law applies there also, you pay the best price, and you'll get the ultimate reward. See? So, لَن تَنَالُ الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُوا مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ. You pay the best price, you pay the ultimate price, and you get the best reward. So, the perfection in piety is only attained after you give away that which you love. Not just what you like, but what you love. مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ. What you love. What you love is a different thing. What you like is a different thing. I like kebab also. But what you love is a different thing altogether. I got a Ferrari, I got a 4x4, and I got a Porsche. Now ask anybody what he loves the most. He'll say you it's a Porsche because it's 20 mil, and then the Ferrari because it's 10, and then by 4x4 because it's 2 million, right? So this is how he will say it, right? So what Allah Pak is saying, you're saying that you want the ultimate reward. Then give me the ultimate price. Give me the best price. Are we giving Allah Ta'ala the best price? Are we prepared to give Allah Ta'ala the best price? Right. So the hadith says that bir, you know, we talk of bir, the perfection in piety. Bir is a partner, it's an associate to truth. You know, a Muslim is truthful, he's honest, he doesn't cheat, he doesn't rob, he doesn't mince his word. He doesn't apply diplomacy, etc., and connive, etc. Like how it happens today, to get the business, we'll connive, diplomacy, everything we'll use to get a business. So we'll cheat, we'll rob, dishonesty, falsehood, everything we'll do just to get something. So the hadith says that bir is a partner to truth. And I just explained what the meaning of truth, right? And you hold on to truth, because truth is a partner to bir, and both of them are companions in Jannat. Talk of truth, and you talk of the perfection in piety. both of them will go hand in hand, hand in glove in Jannah. Both will be together. The logics of it is this, the mechanics of it is that when you're going to be truthful, you're not going to be cheating, you're not going to be robbing, you're not going to be conniving, use diplomacy, etc., whatever, what's used nowadays, then you will be cleaner and purer all the time. To your wife, you'll be cleaner. In your business, you'll be purer. In your dealings, you'll be pure. Everything, you pure, pure, pure. Honesty, just honesty, truth and clean. So there can't be any falsehood. There can't be any contamination. There can't be any cheating in your business. So obviously it will take you to the higher levels, and then this will pay you into Jannah. Because it's a pair. Truthfulness and piety, they are paired up in Jannah together. In Bombay, look at the simple people. Sometimes the simple people, they overtake us in Jannah. Even for 4 months, a little bit, ulama, sohbat, buzurgana, deen's company, etc., they learn some things. Simple people driving a taxi, Palanpur or something, and his work is now to transport people now from one place to the other place. So the family came in, and they got all the attaches and all the big bags, like as though they came from overseas. So big bags they've got, and he transported them wherever they had to be transported. Came back to the taxi rank where he normally operates from. He saw that there's a big bag here, and perhaps it is the last person. Now he doesn't have his address, doesn't have that person's address. So the only resort was to open the bag and see if there's any particulars there, so that he could transport the bag. So as he opens the bag, it's loaded with gold, you know, Kruger coins, and loads of $100 notes, loaded, big bag like this. Now, he says to himself, before I can delay this, I was going to transport it, because my nerves can play games with me. I can say he's a kafir now, Darul Harb, and Mala Ghanimat, a lot of stories I can make. At that time, when you see that wealth, gold, and, you know, stacks of $100 notes, full in a big patache like this, your mind can be funny at that time. You can go in a different direction. Yeah, I get so much. And this kufar they use for all wrong purposes, you know, use of mandirs and all that. I'll build masjids and all that I'll do. Because masjid also, madrasas also need money. So I'll go use it for them. He said, no, I don't want to make stories. I want to look for these people straight away. And just go and give it. So he located. That thing was quite far, about 50 k's he had to travel. He knocked at the door. And he says, this is your amanat. At that time that he reached there, they were all crying. All miserable, crying, distressed. Because a kafir, when he loses his wealth, then he's lost his life. He got nothing to stand now. That was all his treasure it was. And he lost that now. They were in all sobbing and crying for no more. He came with the old attache. Now they counted, so everything is exact. Now they were to give some stacks of whatever they had, right? Dollars, whatever. So he said, no, I just got one request. Take all this, it's yours. See, because I did it for Allah Ta'ala. When I did it for Allah Ta'ala, then I don't want this corpus for the khidmat that I have done. For the service that I've done, I don't want any. But what I'm feeling guilty about is, in the process of looking for your particulars, I've damaged your bag. So this is 100 rupee here. Go and fix this bag of yours. You see this truth. Truth and honesty. Where it takes you. From one level to the other level to the third level. It just escalates you. But how it impacts on that kafir. That kafir turned out to be a very senior person in that parliament or whatever. Parliament or in that party, political party. And he had a different outlook towards Muslim. Now his whole outlook changed. Say, oh, this is a Muslim. This is a Muslim, what he does. His whole outlook changed. But you see, one Muslim and his truth, his honesty, not conniving, not manipulating, no diplomacy, straight, clean, pure, a simple man, no status at all, taxi driver, what status he's got. But you see, the impression that he's left in this person and his family. He's got a man of position, influence. What impact is on his life? So when you want, you see Allah Ta'ala that I want this, right? The Allah Ta'ala says, right, what you love most, give that to me. What you love most, not all. If you got the 10 cars, not all. One car, at least give it to me. But not your scrap car. The one that you parked in the garage now, is parked off there. You're looking for a buyer now. You can't get a buyer for that thing. It's so scrapped. You underrate that thing from 100,000 to 50,000. You can't get a buyer for that. So never mind. Mari Bakri Khuda ke naam. You think he's dead now? Maybe I give it to Allah Pak, you know. I ask you, if someone gave you a scrap, you know, as a gift, you're a wealthy person, but something was totally scrap, redundant, useless, computer was all redundant, a big old size computer, hardly working now. He says, all right, Madrasa Talimuddin, we give it to you. For the sake of Allah Ta'ala, right? For the sake of Allah Ta'ala, we give it to you. You think Allah Ta'ala appreciates that? Inna Allah la ghaniyun anil alameen. Ghaniyun hamid. Allah Ta'ala is free of all ones. He doesn't need it. But He wants to see your heart. Bakri time now, you have this phone coming in. Mulana, you know what? The tail one is a little bit more expensive, 500 and more. And without the tail, it's 500 cheaper. Can't we buy that one, Mulana? I said, Mulana, I tell the brothers, you were giving a gift in the name of Allah Ta'ala once in a year. Can't you leave out some of your pleasure, that little bit of toys that you bought for your children, and give it in the name of Allah Ta'ala? Can't you give it with that heart? Where's your heart? For Allah Ta'ala, at least that 500 rand, 600 rand, you're making a squeal about it, make a big noise about the thing. But it's once in the year that this thing comes about, and then too you give it with this type of a bitter heart. Where's your love? Where's your muhabbat? Are you playing games with Allah Ta'ala? So Allah Ta'ala is saying, لَن تَنَالُ الْبِرَّ حَتَّى That price is, Allah Ta'ala is saying, perfection of piety for the best price. For what you, the best price is what you like. You give me what you like, I'll give it to you. Abu Talha radiallahu anhu, when this verse was revealed, you see the difference with the Sahaba Kiram and us was that immediately they heard and they just responded straight away. Like it's a light switch, you know, you just switch on and they'll the light. So Nabi Sahib had to just say it and they switched on. He had to just say it and it switched on. There was no delay between his statement and their response. When Nabi Sahib had said this, so he had a bagh, an orchard, Bayruha, right now it's in the present haram. Right into the haram it is. I would say it is going to be valued at billions because it's in the present haram. So what a priceless thing. Nabi Sahib himself enjoyed the water. He would like the water of this place here. And when this verse came down, they said, Ya Nabi Allah, the most priceless thing in my possession presently is this bagh, is this orchard. I want to give it in the name of Allah Ta'ala. See the heart. Dil chahiye, bhai. This heart. Allah wants to see this. وَلَكِنْ يَنَالُوا تَقْوَى مِنْكُمْ. This is what Allah is saying. Everything else is a show. But this, what heart do you have? So Nabi Sahib himself said, this is something, proximate words, really this is something very valuable. Because you can see the precincts, right, in the precincts of the haram, and the water is so good, the orchard is so well maintained. And then he says, I suggest you give it to some of your own family. Some of your family. Then he looked around, his family now, alright, this family, that family. Then he found two of his families, one is meeting up in the fifth generation, right, fifth ancestry, and one in the sixth ancestry. I think none of us here can remember any of our relatives in the sixth ancestry. You know, great-grandfather's great-grandfather. Now he traced the great-grandfather's great-grandfather, and he found one person, Ubay ibn Ka'b, and the other person he found in the fifth generation, Hassan ibn Thabit, radiallahu anhu. Right? And both of them were financially alright, but they were not very secure. So he said, half for this person, half for that person. So it was not just a sadaqah, like, you know, gareeb now, sympathize with the person. He felt he's not very, very financially secure, give half to him, half to him. See? So the Sahaba ikram, the difference between them and us was, when they heard it, it was an immediate response. He heard it, he said, no, I can't attain this. لَن تَنَالُ الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُ مِمَّا. What you love, you give some of that. Zayd ibn Harisa, radiallahu anhu, and he's also the slave of Nabi that was freed. When he heard this, he saw the most valuable thing in his possession was his horse, right? Like how he got a Merc or a BM or a 4x4 or something, right? So he saw this was the most valuable thing. It's also a transport, like we got transport today. So this is the most valuable. But I want to give this away. Nabi Sahib accepted that. If someone gives you a scrap, will you accept it as a gift? So you know, you're my good friend, but just take the scrap now. are you going to, if you accept it, you're going to accept it happily. Under constraints, perhaps you will take it. I got nothing, no, nothing to drive around with, but I will accept it. But as a respectable person, as a person of nobility, someone gives you a scrap car, are you going to accept that thing as a gift? You know, Bakrid gift, I'm giving this to you. You don't want to accept that. You feel very ashamed, embarrassed. That was a scrap that was not good for him. He's passing it on. He's passing on his problems to me. That's what he would say. Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu, when he heard the same hadith, the same verse of the Quran Sharif, he looked around and he saw, now what's the most valuable thing in my property? Everybody's competing now. Because we want to be bargaining for the ultimate. We want that and want that to happen. So what is the most priceless thing in my possession? So he saw the most priceless thing is his slave girl, most beautiful one. It was a time of slavery. And the most beautiful that he had at that time, he said, now this I must give it away. Right. Now the idea is that the thing that is liked most by you, give it away in the path of Allah Ta'ala. Now it can be done by different people in different ways. Right? The best, the ultimate is giving away life, because there isn't a thing as valuable as life, right? But life is not the only thing. Someone can give his reputation. From now, Labak, the most valuable thing in my sight is my reputation. Right? My respect. If someone, I just, for example, Labak protects all of us, but if someone's daughter or his wife eloped, can you think of an embarrassment worse than that? See, I take everything, but give this thing back to me. So this sahabi made a vow with Allah Ta'ala that anybody is going to disgrace me, embarrass me, insult me, I have given my respect to you, Allah Ta'ala. You can embarrass me, you can disgrace me, you can insult me, but my respect is for you. I have given it to you, so he insults me, I am not going to do anything about it at all. Because I want to also pardon. I want to also buy that reward that you are giving, I want to buy it as well.